Christian Wade is the running back, and he gets the carry here for the Bills. And look at Wade go! All the way from England to the house! Touchdown, Buffalo! Unbelievable!
Look at the Bills sideline. They are going crazy for their friend from England. Christian Wade took the handoff, put his foot in the ground, and took it to the house.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you're listening to us. Thank you for listening. You're listening to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Matt here as always, and Alex is here as well.
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
Not too bad. You got one question to ask you as well.
Yeah.
What were you doing at around 3 a.m. this morning?
I cannot legally say that.
No, really?
No, I'm kidding. I was sleeping. Yeah. Well, I stayed up for the first drive, and that's it. As soon as I don't even remember how it ended, but I just saw Allen throw like six straight passes. I'm like, all right, this is still preseason football, so whatever.
Well, I think I will admit that I initially went to bed. I actually was asleep for the start of it. I got woken up, went down, turned on, see how it got on, and just saw Christian Wade getting that touchdown on his only rushing attempt, 65 yards to the house.
Yeah, that was something. I mean, I woke up to my Twitter on fire, my Facebook on fire about just reposts of that. That's got to be the coolest thing that I've ever seen in the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's the same for me. I mean, the Twitter just lit up for me, and obviously all my retweets and all that got likes and all that. So all day, my whole Twitter was just blurting out favorites, likes, retweets and all that. But it's good. And hopefully he will build on that and we can get a lot more. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, or potentially a lot to talk about in there. And this where we bring on to our guest. He co-hosts the Bills Beat with Joe Buscala. And he's a beat reporter. He is Matthew Fairburn. So we just interviewed him, or here he is on the interview, and enjoy what he has to say. And we are joined now on the Red, White and Buffalo Blues by Matt Fairburn, who is a co-host of the Bills Beat podcast. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
First of all, we want to start off with obviously training camp's now in the books, and good old football's now back up and running. Obviously, being beat reporter, getting almost like a pitch side view of the training camp. Just a few questions on who's impressed you the most, who can sneak onto the roster, and was there any disappointments and potential surprise cuts, in your opinion?
You know, I would say, you know, the wide receiver position to me has been an interesting one, because there were a lot of names going into it that people were excited about, particularly Duke Williams and David Sills, and neither one of them has really established themselves through, you know, 10 training camp practices and now one preseason game. They've kind of fallen back, and guys like Ray McLeod, Isaiah McKenzie, and Cam Phillips have really inserted themselves into the competition for that sixth wide receiver spot. That's probably not something a ton of people were expecting. And then, you know, at running back, TJ Yeldon has probably been the biggest disappointment of the group, with, I would say, Devin Singletary being the surprise. I mean, everybody knew that as a third round pick, he had some talent and some ability. You weren't sure how quickly it would translate, but, you know, in his first action last night, you know, he looked pretty good, and he looked really good during training camp practices as well. I would say, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, those are some guys that have stood out to me, good and bad.
Yeah. I mean, we did about a few episodes back, done like a preview, wide receiver preview. I think both me and Alex had Duke Williams getting that last spot. So obviously now we're seeing seeing the preseason game, obviously hearing all the reports in training camp, I think we may be potentially a bit off the mark on that one.
Yeah, he's had an interesting start. You know, I mean, I understand why you would think he would have that shot at the sixth receiver spot going in, because as a big physical receiver, he really has a skill set that nobody else on the roster has. But so far, that hasn't translated into production, whether it's during practices or during, you know, the preseason game last night. He still has time, but he's also, you know, on a futures contract. They're not really beholden to him in any way, as opposed to Ray McLeod, who, you know, they spent a draft pick on, or Cam Phillips, who they've spent a year developing on their practice squad. Isaiah McKenzie was on the team last year. So that's what's giving those guys a slight edge right now. But Williams still has a ton of ability. We'll just have to see if it manifests itself in any meaningful way in the next couple of weeks.
I just had this idea that, I mean, talking about Duke Williams and David Sills, when the NFL changed the training camp schedule, I think maybe in like 2011, where they limited, they cut the amount of practices you're allowed to have. Since that's happened, do you think like walk-on players, like undrafted free agents, have been given a disadvantage to that like second-year player since that's happened?
Maybe in some cases. I still think, you know, there were some, you know, you saw Robert Foster last year, you know, make this team out of training camp and make an impact as an undrafted free agent. They had a, you know, they've had a few guys stick in that role, but it's definitely not easy. You know, you have to either have really, you know, unique ability and have fallen out of the draft for, you know, reasons that, whether it's opportunity or injury or off the field stuff that helps you get that inside track, or you have to be just a really intuitive and smart football player to be able to pick up the playbook and hit the ground running. Because the advantage guys like Isaiah McKenzie and Cam Phillips and Ray McLeod have is they've spent a whole year in this offense. And, you know, like you mentioned, without the benefit of two-a-days and other things like that, that year on the practice squad, or, you know, in Isaiah McKenzie and Ray McLeod's case, you know, some time spent on the roster, it's really valuable to have that during the season and, you know, give you a baseline going into training camp. There's no doubt those guys were head and shoulders above, you know, guys like Duke Williams from a playbook standpoint. And in David Sills' case, he doesn't have the body yet. You know, he's a guy that would be a perfect practice squad candidate because he needs to bulk up and learn how to deal with the physicality of the NFL game. And he just doesn't have that yet. And he's not going to get it, you know, in the next 3 weeks. So he's a guy that would be, you know, well served by spending some time on the practice squad.
Gotcha. Yeah. So now with training camp over, let's transition into the preseason game. And I've signed the preseason pledge, Matt, I'm sure you have as well, but looking at the offensive line, I'm going to try not to overreact to anything that I saw last night, but the offseason brought hope for our offensive line, right? But over the last few weeks, I feel like I'm exactly where I was at the end of last year. Do you think that's all the Mitch Morse injury? And did we see our starting O-line last night? Was that what we're going to go with?
I would say outside of, you know, hopefully Mitch Morse being healthy enough to start at center, that is likely the starting offensive line, what you saw last night. And I think it was better than what we have seen in practice the handful of days prior to the preseason game. And the big reason for that is John Feliciano being at center instead of Russell Bodine. Not to say John Feliciano is a bona fide Pro Bowler by any means, and he's definitely a step down from Morse. But he's a step up from Bodine. And when Bodine was in there during practice, you could see things weren't quite right, whether it was communication with the guards or his snaps were off and he's just getting pushed into the backfield. He was the sore spot. And there's a reason he opened up camp as really their fourth option at center behind Mitch Morse, Spencer Long, and John Feliciano. And with the other three guys getting hurt, he got thrown into that first team role. He's coming off an injury last year as well. So he was really the weak spot. I think the other guys have all done enough to provide a little bit of hope. I think Cody Ford had his ups and downs last night. I think Ty Nseke at right tackle has been great. And I think that right side of the line should be a lot better, especially in the running game. And so there's still some reason for hope, I think. And particularly if Mitch Morris can get back and stay healthy, they should be a much better line than they were a year ago, which isn't saying a whole lot because last year's offensive line was so bad. But I do think they should take a step forward.
Yeah. What are the prospects for Mitch Morris starting week one? Do we have any idea yet?
I would say they're pretty good, but yeah. It's always tough to tell, with concussions. He's progressed, to the point where he's been out on the field, not practicing, but he's been out there and going through some, he's out there going through some very light calisthenics and whatnot, which shows that this isn't one of those major long-term concussions where he needs to be in a quiet, dark room away from the team. He's at least able to be out on the field when there's music blasting and everything else. Yeah. So that's a positive sign to me. We're still, almost a full month away from, the regular season opener. So I would think he's going to be okay. Even his major concussion he got, which was last year, was a 6-week deal. So, if you use that timetable, even then he should be ready. The only drawback is obviously he's not getting the time with Josh Allen and the rest of, the offense to get on the same page and get himself into game condition. But I would think this concussion will be behind him sooner rather than later. The only thing you worry about is, how likely is he to get another one? And as we know, the more concussions a guy gets, the more likely he is to, continue to get them. So that's going to be the real scary part about this entering the season for Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, I was listening today, at work to your latest episode with reviewing the game last night. Obviously, you're saying about Cody Ford, he should be a definite starter at right guard. Obviously, potentially kick out tackle if the worst case scenario actually does happen. Do you actually see then McDermott, Bobby Johnson, that's just keeping faith with him at right guard during practices and obviously going forward in preseason?
I think that's going to be their plan right now because I think it gives them the best group of five is to have. You want Ty Nseke on the field. The idea of him being a backup is just, it doesn't make any sense. He's clearly one of the best five offensive linemen, and Cody Ford's probably a better guard than he is a tackle. And so, that gets you better at two spots and allows you to keep Deion Dawkins at left tackle, who, even though he wasn't great last year, I think is still one of your five best offensive linemen. And then you have Quentin Spain at left guard and the revolving door at center until Mitch Morris is healthy, but still gives you the most flexibility with your backups. You can always use Ford as the third tackle if one of those guys gets hurt and you need to shuffle things around because you've got quality backups in Feliciano and Long who can play guard and step in. I think Ford's flexibility is a real asset in terms of managing this roster. You almost don't need to go with a third or fourth offensive tackle outside of Ford, Dawkins, and Nseke because you can move things around as you see fit if one of those guys were to get injured. And I do think Ford's future is probably at guard. The fact that they've already moved him there and had him running with the starters there, I think shows you everything, about how they feel in that regard. And I think they'll continue forward with that because Nseke isn't slowing down. I think he's been arguably their best offensive lineman during training camp.
Yeah, I mean, going on, I think most of our listeners probably want to hear your views and obviously what he actually did with his one reception or one rush yesterday. Christian Wade, we've had Jerron Hind back in 2015 with the 49ers have a blistering preseason and obviously fade out. With Christian Wade and obviously what he showed with his one touch and what he's shown with limited time in training camp, is there do you do you see a future for him? Would he obviously definitely stick on the practice squad? Would it be a case that probably next year he'd potentially crack the roster?
Yeah, you know, I like to think that there's a future there. I mean, he is. I think that moment last night was one of the coolest preseason moments that I've gotten to see. You know, a guy playing in his first competitive football game, you know, scoring a 65-yard touchdown the first time he touches the ball. I mean, and it was a play he had screwed up a bunch in practice, and then they, you know, kept telling him to cut it inside. So, you know, he was kind of just freaking out, tunnel vision, and just, you know, took the cut exactly how they told him to, and, you know, put his head down, and nobody could catch him. I mean, that speed he has is something special. What he can do in the open field, anybody who's watched him play rugby has seen, you know, some of the elusiveness that he has. I would think at the very least, you know, he's got a shot to return kicks, and he definitely needs some time. There's a lot of stuff that is brand new to him, and stuff that is, you know, hard for him to grasp right now. But, you know, the ability he has and the speed that he has, you know, he's an exciting guy to have on the practice squad. And he's a great, great guy to have in the locker room, because he's a true professional, having, you know, been a pro rugby player for a decade, basically. And, you know, the enthusiasm and the joy that he brings to the room, I think, is so contagious. And you saw that last night. And I think that's why he's going to be an asset for this team on the practice squad, and, you know, then have he should have a legitimate chance to make a run at a roster spot next year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying to reach out to him to get him onto the podcast to get his views. One thing that I just wanted to try and clarify and get my head around, obviously with the international player pathway, the Bills get that extra spot for Christian, should they want to put him on there. Come cuts, if he gets cut, does he automatically go straight on there, or is he into the waiver for potentially anyone else to pick up? Or is he specifically for the Bills?
So technically, if they cut him, he can be put on waivers, but a team would have to claim him and keep him on their 53-man roster. And so that's where it's probably, you know, they're probably safe to cut him. Once he's on the Bills practice squad, my understanding is that he's there for the rest of the season. Yeah. No, they can't call him up, and nobody can pluck him off the practice squad. The one chance the rest of the NFL would have at getting him would be, you know, if the Bills were to cut him at the end of the preseason, that first weekend. Once he clears through waivers and they get him on the practice squad, you know, everything, he's there. So that's kind of the way it'll work. And I don't know. It's like, if he keeps making runs like that, would an NFL team out there that, you know, has an extra spot say, hey, maybe we'll stash this guy and steal him? I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he's going to go for 65 yards and a touchdown on every time he touches the ball, but a few more runs like that might make another team, you know, think twice come cut down weekend.
Yeah.
I know that I said I'm not going to overreact because it's the preseason, but let me just overreact real quick. Josh Allen, another game where his completion percentage is in the low 50s, any chance that he could hit 60%, which is kind of like where you want your quarterback at? I mean, don't consider this to just be like in the Colts game. I'm not asking specifically about that, but in everything you've seen, especially with Cole Beasley, can Josh Allen have a respectable completion percentage this year?
I think he can. I mean, you're in the right neighborhood there, shooting for 60%. You know, this guy is never going to be a high 60s, low 70s completion percentage guy. But, you know, I think with the improved offensive line and guys like Cole Beasley and John Brown, there's more, you know, he has more options. You know, with the offensive line the way it is, he's going to be able to stand in the pocket and be more comfortable, go through his reads, and take those outlet passes to guys like Beasley and Brown when Brown isn't running the deep patterns. I think he understands the offense better. He's playing more in control. The accuracy still isn't good. And quite frankly, it probably never will be that good. You know, I think people see him make one, you know, amazing pinpoint throw down the field and think, see, he's accurate. But the thing about accuracy is consistency. Being able to hit the same spot over and over again. And he can't really do that yet. And I don't know that he'll be able to. I don't know that you picked that up. We haven't seen too many quarterbacks over the course of time drastically improve their accuracy, but getting it to 60% should be doable. And if you do that, you know, Cam Newton has hovered around that spot for most of his career, and what he brings in the running game and what he brings in the vertical passing game allow the Panthers to build an offense around him despite his lack of pinpoint accuracy. So I don't think it's, you know, a deal breaker if he can't be a high 60s, you know, completion percentage guy. I still think he can be an effective quarterback and that they can build an offense to his skill set. But you're right in the fact that you can't, you know, win games hovering in the low 50%. You got to be higher than that. And it's about more than the completion percentage, too. It's about ball placement and, you know, accuracy. These days, we don't need to just rely on completion percentage numbers that, you know, places like Pro Football Focus and, you know, other, you know, next gen stats through the NFL can, you know, track, you know, accuracy and ball placement and how many of these throws are catchable, which gives us a better context. And, you know, he wasn't good in those metrics last year either. So that's where you'd like to see him improve, even if other circumstances prevent the completion percentage from going
way. Yeah, I mean, with the Bills bringing in Ken Dorsey and obviously him familiar a year into Brian DeBoer's offensive playbook, there is that improvement there that he's obviously starting to get under the short throws in. Is it something that obviously, not to get too overly excited about, but excited that it's not just going to be him looking, then tucking and running?
Yeah, absolutely. He looks so much more comfortable with the offense. He's playing. It seems like the game has slowed down a little bit for him, you know, as the football coaches love to say. I mean, he's trusting the offensive line more and knows what he's seeing. And so he's not, you know, panicking. Maybe panicking is not the exact word for what he would do last year, but he really seemed to rush his process and know that pressure was going to come quickly, because usually it was coming quickly with the way the offensive line played. But now that he understands what he's seeing, he understands, you know, he has more of an ownership of the offense. Last year, he was learning the offense. Now they're tailoring the offense to his skill set because he knows it. He has ownership of what concepts he likes to run and what they can do to a defense. The real test is going to be, you know, how that translates to the regular season, because now teams have quite a bit of tape on him. And I think, you know, there's teams showed at the end of last year the ability to adjust to the way that he played and find a way to slow him down. So we'll see if, you know, teams are able to take away his rushing ability, what he does and how he responds. And, you know, that's what makes a great quarterback, is a guy that can, you know, see what a defense is trying to do to him and counter that with something else and play mind games with the defense. And, you know, obviously it's tough for a second year quarterback to get to that point, you know, in year two, but you'd like to see some signs of it. And like you said, you don't want to see him just tucking and running all the time. You want to see him showing a more advanced understanding of the passing game, which I think early on he's done.
Yeah, I could imagine if they're going to like linebacker spy him or have their defensive ends contain, he should be able to find Beasley or like the running back out of on the sides. So it's good to see that he's now being able to progress through reads and things like that. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, even there's, you know, I look at the Houston game last year, which was the game he got hurt, and Houston knew exactly how to play him with the various pressures, disguising coverages, you know, big time. Disguising coverages is what's going to, you know, get him more than, you know, more than even a spy probably, because I think he can even beat a spy in the open field sometimes, the way that he runs and the way they spread out, you know, with four and five receivers, puts a lot of stress on the defense. But, you know, the way teams like Houston disguised coverages against him, New England did the same. I mean, it's a tough thing for a young quarterback, and I think he'll learn more and more, but you can already see that, well, he gets to go up against the Bills defense in practice every day, and you know, those guys disguise coverages as well as anybody. So he's getting a lot of good looks and, you know, getting a lot of good football under his belt.
And yeah. Speaking of the defense, I mean, on our show, we spent like 80% of our time talking about the offense, quarterback, offensive line, wide receivers. But we haven't talked a lot about the defense. I think it's because I don't see any weaknesses. I don't see a hole on defense. Is there, can you like forcibly say that there's something to worry about on defense, or is it going to be another top five defense?
There's nothing too major to worry about with this group. They return almost everybody from a year ago outside of Kyle Williams. And, you know, I think they have a chance to be better in some ways than last year. You know, Ed Oliver looks like he could be an upgrade as a pass rusher over the 2018 version of Kyle Williams, which is, you know, obviously Kyle Williams set the bar high, but the way he was playing at the end of his career, Oliver has a chance to jump in and pick right up where Kyle left off. And, you know, that could change this defense a bit. If they're able to get a good amount of interior pressure, you know, that can really screw up an offense. You've got Tremaine Edmonds, a year older, year more experienced, should be, you know, kind of a stud on this defense. And then the secondary is all back. They're all healthy for now. And Matt Milano's back, still getting his feet underneath him after ending the year injured. But if there's one spot, I would say it's the pass rush off the edge, you know, with Jerry Hughes being really their biggest threat. And then you have, hopefully, you know, a better year from Trent Murphy, who, you know, was fighting through injuries last year. And then you've got Shaq Lawson, Daryl Johnson looked pretty good. So, you know, that's probably the biggest question mark, but I wouldn't say it's a major weakness at this point.
What about Mike Love? Just quickly on the pass rush. Obviously, he's been running with the twos ahead of Eddie Yarbrough and Daryl Johnson. Did he look good in what action he had last night? And from training camp, do you see him actually potentially beating out like Eddie Yarbrough, maybe even Daryl Johnson?
Yeah, I would say Mike Love and Daryl Johnson are both ahead of Eddie Yarbrough right now, and Love probably looked the best early on out of him and Daryl Johnson, but I think Daryl Johnson has come on strong, you know, in the last week or so in practice and then in the game last night. Love is still very much in the mix. He's taken a big jump from year one to year two. Seems like he's gotten, you know, bigger and stronger, and, you know, he's quick off the line of scrimmage. Both he and Daryl Johnson, I think, provide a nice change of pace, kind of third down situational rusher. And, you know, obviously, you know, Daryl Johnson being a bit younger, but I think, you know, Daryl Johnson being a draft pick might help him out. But he was only a seventh round pick. Mike Love was undrafted. So, you know, we'll see what they do there. I've liked what I've seen out of both those guys. And it might mean that Eddie Yarbrough is on the outside looking in.
Yeah. I mean, final question. I think most of our listeners, most Bills fans probably want to know this. Is the punter battle Corey versus Corey? Who's got it?
Come on. Let's just end the interview here. Go ahead.
I should leave that to you guys. You know, you watch a lot of soccer. You probably have a good idea of what, you know, these guys are doing as kickers. But I would be lying to you if I said that I was an expert in punting. I think both are still in the mix. Nobody's done anything to win the job, but I also don't know what exactly you do to win a punter job. So yeah. I also would not be shocked, and I've been saying this early in camp, I wouldn't be shocked if they find somebody on waivers at the end of the preseason and pick them up. I mean, that's kind of how the punter position works. They seem to like both these guys, and they're young, and Corey Carter had a couple of, you know, big punts last night, but who the hell knows, to be honest.
No, that's cool. I think that's probably the least pressing, but a very important question to ask anyway. Thank you very much for your time, Matthew. Where can our listeners actually follow you, listen to your podcast, and all that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Fairburn. Our podcast is The Bills Beat. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts, and my written work's all on theathletic.com.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you very, very much for your time, Matthew.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you. Take care.
And that was Matthew Fairburn, co-host of the Bills Beat. We thank him for his time. And that will do it for this special episode. We recap the Bills getting off to a 1-0 start. I'm ever the optimist that we're going to go 4-0 this preseason. What about you, Alex?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've bet all of the money that I have that the Bills are going to go 4-0 this preseason. Yeah.
Anyway, they've got a couple more practices before they play Carolina, which I believe is a joint practice. They're doing joint practice with the Panthers in Carolina.
Yeah, those usually always end up with the two teams fighting, so that'll be fun to see.
We'll probably review that that game in a couple of podcast time. Obviously, stay tuned. On Monday, we drop the next episode, the regular episode of the Red, White and Buffalo Blues UK Bills podcast, where we talk about the linebackers with the 53-man roster, the positional review and the all-time roster and who would be your linebackers. So until this time, until next time, it's good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening. Keep subscribing and reviewing, and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Yeah, not us.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
Yeah. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.